Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Preservation CT, formerly the Connecticut Trust for Historic Preservation, is turning 50 this year, so we're going to kick off a series of interviews with representatives looking back over the last half century to learn more about how the office is going to continue sustaining and preserving critical buildings, sites, even social and cultural practices that helped shape the state we live in. Then we're going to circle back with a couple of folks from Reset, providing co-working space, accelerator, and mentoring programs while supporting entrepreneurs responding to community challenges. Reset just acquired New Haven-based CoLab, so we're going to find out why and how this newly fortified nonprofit is going to work advancing Connecticut's future. And we're going to close with a couple of members from the Chi Sigma chapter of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority. This local chapter is dedicated to giving back, and they're hosting a free annual youth symposium March 8th to empower and inspire youths ages 8 to 18 through engaging workshops, music, and community connections. So stick around, and we'll let you in on how to get involved. But first, Families United in Newtown, a nonprofit dedicated to social, emotional support, recreation, and inclusion of young people on the autism spectrum, those with alternate abilities, and other neurodivergent challenges, is holding a 90s-themed benefit dinner and concert at 5 p.m. on Saturday, March 29th at the Newtown Congregational Church. The event will feature food, beverages, raffles, and live musical performances of iconic 90s songs. To learn more about the cause, visit familiesunitednewtown.org, or to get tickets for the concert, go to bit.ly/rockinforautism. Well, as we mentioned in the introduction, we are pleased to welcome back to the program Preservation Connecticut, which is a statewide nonprofit membership organization that was established as the Connecticut Trust for Historic Preservation by a special act of the state legislature in 1975. That organization that has morphed into Preservation Connecticut has been a long, long, long time staple guest here on our program. And we're so glad to be able to catch up with them every year or two to find out about everything that's new and exciting. Right now, what's most exciting is the 50-year celebration. So as we welcome Jane Montanaro, their Executive Director of Preservation Connecticut, we will tell you that this interview is kind of happening in one of those kind of weird radio places where we're going to be talking about something that hasn't happened yet, but we're going to be talking about it and broadcasting this segment after it happened. So while we're recording this before the kickoff at the state capitol on February 20th, we're playing this for you the weekend after. So Jane, how are you this morning? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, John.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Feels great to be 50 years old.
Yes, yes, 50. May we always be 50. So let's talk about what your what's in the plan for this event that has happened already on the 20th of February, the kickoff to the 50 year. What are you expecting to highlight during that activity?
Yes, so February 20th at the Legislative Office Building in the second floor atrium, we're planning to have a celebration of 50 years of stewardship in Preservation Connecticut. We're inviting all of our members, our trustees, our partners, and all the legislators to drop by and take a look at and reflect upon where we've come in 50 years. We'll have a big map backdrop that will show a QR code that folks can scan to see the impact that Preservation Connecticut has had in their individual communities. And we'll have cupcakes. Of course, you can't have a birthday celebration without some cake. Mm. And we'll also be wanting to, you know, talk directly with legislators to hear what some of the issues are in their districts that they're hearing from constituents, what priorities they want to see pursue in preservation. And we're also going to be focusing on where the funding comes from for historic preservation projects. Preservation is funded by the state through a separate dedicated fund known as the Community Investment Act, and that fund comes from real estate transfers. So it's very important for the legislators to know that that's an off-budget fund that's set aside just for historic preservation, affordable housing, farmland, open space, all of these qualities that we want to invest in our communities for quality of life. And it's important that they protect that fund and help us grow that fund. So we'll be sharing how that money is being spent in preservation and talking about the challenges and looking forward to future partnerships with our legislators and our members.
Very good. It is probably fresh in your memory because the development of a updated strategic plan is always a incredibly important but very labor-intensive initiative. And you guys have completed it. The main goals in the strategic plan remain the same: to make a big impact, engage, inspire, and strengthen the organization. But the new plan includes a new mission and 5 strategic priorities to guide the implementation of the plan goals. What are a few of those strategic priorities that you feel that the entire state of Connecticut should be in on?
Right. So Preservation Connecticut is successful because of its private-public partnership. So we have strong partnership with the Connecticut State Historic Preservation Office and our legislature, as I noted. But we also have a really strong constituency of members and donors and private businesses and developers, municipalities, and foundations who support our work and believe in our work. So being able to continue to grow those partnerships and continue to receive the wonderful support from everyone around Connecticut is certainly one of the primary goals of Connecticut Preservation Connecticut going forward. And we feel that we have been able to serve all of our communities, and we continue to serve everyone in Connecticut and every community. Traditionally, we've served on a very, broad level, we feel. We've had a good coverage around Connecticut and being active in every community. But going forward, we're looking to see if we can take a little bit of a deeper dive and be more invested in some of the investments that we're making in communities, and be able to really build on synergy between historic preservation, housing, other initiatives that are happening within a community to really make a difference. And so that the investment in historic preservation isn't just in historic buildings, but it's actually in strengthening that community and strengthening all of the partnerships within that community as well.
And I see one of the priorities is, getting that information communicated to the extent that you can enhance a fundraising program utilizing this 50th anniversary celebration as an impetus to get more people not only knowledgeable of Preservation Connecticut, but also investing in it.
Yes. Our members are really important to us, certainly for the financial benefit, and we encourage everyone to please be a member of Preservation Connecticut, but we also rely on those members to be part of the team and part of our organization and supplying, that boots on the ground sort of perspective and being able to feel like they can call on us. They're a member. A lot of times people will call on us for assistance, and they're very proud to say that they're a member. So being able to build members that are both individuals and organizations is always a priority with Preservation Connecticut, and we look forward to working with as many diverse groups and build new partnerships in the next 50 years.
I'm also interested to talk about the goal of expanding Preservation Connecticut's criteria, definition, and approaches to serve all communities and all histories. So I think when people think about historic preservation, they think about monuments and buildings and perhaps things like the Merritt Parkway and historic locations and parks. But when you say all histories, does that go beyond just the stuff we can see and touch?
So when we say all histories, we mean all histories. We are a state and a nation of many people, many backgrounds, many experiences, and everyone brings, you know, wonderful culture and stories to our way of life. Mm-hmm. And traditionally, historic preservation has dealt more with the mainstream history and the, you know, the most important architectural buildings in town. And so a lot of that work has been done and we've covered it. And those are wonderful. We're very proud of all the work that we've done. But being able to really serve everyone is, of course, a mission for us. And we're very fortunate that we can do that in a very hands-on way, because we have a team of circuit riders who are folks that are historic preservation professionals with a lot of different skills who are able to work with local communities and identify what their priorities are for historic preservation, how they want to see their site or their community grow, what the story is within that community that's important to tell or preserve or document. And preservation, we always say preservation is local. So we're the, even though we're the statewide organization, we don't come into a community and tell them how we feel their resources should be preserved or prioritized. We listen to the community. We want to hear what's important to them. And we want to include all members of the community to have a voice.
Hmm. It's also laudable that you want to identify future opportunities to use historic preservation to address contemporary challenges and expand the reach and impact of Preservation Connecticut. In that vein, can you reference any of the projects, perhaps, or the 50 places where Connecticut Trust and Preservation Connecticut made a difference that has helped a community or a neighborhood or an entity or a park or a location, a site, address contemporary challenges? Or can you kind of, frame that a little better?
Sure. So preservation does, you know, check all the boxes. It's where we live, we work, you know, we thrive, we, you know, celebrate our culture. So it does check, you know, every box, and it addresses a lot of the social challenges that we're facing today, which could be equity challenges or development pressures, housing challenges, climate challenges. So these are things we're looking at really focusing on in the future to see what resources we can bring to meet those challenges. Every community will, you know, have their own voice in meeting these challenges, but we think that because it's the built environment, we have to protect it. We have to work together to make sure that it's done sustainably and in an inclusive manner.
Well, that's great. And one of the other strategic priorities is using the Washington Park Community Preservation Project as a model and blueprint for how to grow Preservation Connecticut's capacity to use preservation to address larger scale community challenges. Remind us about the Washington Park Community Preservation Project and how you hope to kind of elevate that as a template for future work.
So we're so excited about this opportunity. We were awarded a $5 million grant from the state of Connecticut, their Community Investment Fund 2030, they call it. Mm-hmm. And we've worked with community partners in Washington Park to develop this program where we are investing in five religious organizations that are all centered around Washington Park. We're investing in their structure and their capital needs for their structures, but really it's about supporting all of the good work that these organizations do in their communities. They are pillars in the community providing services. And by investing in the buildings, we're able to ensure that these places will remain viable and be able to serve soup kitchens, daycares, you know, substance abuse challenges, all of the challenges that that area is facing. By working together as one voice, we're able to, you know, really draw attention to the needs in that community, and we're working on bringing in more partners. We're hoping that not only will just these changes be made to the church structures themselves, but by bringing in the synergy, we'll be bringing in more investment into the area, be able to serve more folks in the area, and actually expand the economic and diverse community development of that area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in Bridgeport?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Beautiful site down there. I'm telling you, if you kind of stand in the middle of that park and you squint your eyes a little bit and you look around, you can almost feel like being transported in time, especially when you're looking at some of those beautiful buildings that were built by or in the era of P.T. Barnum and all the industrialists and other bankers and community leaders who resided around that park.
Yeah.
and that beautiful kind of elevated band shell in the middle and all that, fantastic site. I do remind people to try to check out Washington Park if they're ever going to Bridgeport for a ball game or a concert or to the zoo or to the museums down there, that they should take a drive over there and check that out. Really a gorgeous location. So before we let you go, Jane, you have an award event coming up in May, and it's a great way for people to come out and support Preservation Connecticut, get to know the organization better, and maybe even help to fulfill the final strategic priority, and that is being part of fortifying your staff and board, and being part of the development of retention for those individuals. Tell us about this award ceremony.
Yes, so on May 8th, we'll be at the New Haven Country Club for our annual Preservation Awards. It's a wonderful opportunity for us to acknowledge people, places, projects in Connecticut that have done extraordinary preservation work. And oftentimes it's, you know, volunteers who have just rolled up their sleeves to do something extraordinary in their community, or, you know, a private property owner. Or an organization or a developer. It runs the gamut from, you know, very simple preservation projects to very sophisticated preservation projects. And it's really a wonderful opportunity to celebrate all of those efforts that go on in Connecticut. And then we also do, you know, acknowledge our trustees and our members and our sponsors. It's a great opportunity for folks to come together and network and celebrate one another. So we do encourage people to join us. The New Haven Country Club is a wonderful venue. This year, we're planning to do a dinner as well because it is our 50th, so we have to make it a fancy event. So we're hoping that we'll see a lot of people come out and join us in the celebration.
Doing business for 50 years, most currently out of their beautiful historic location on Whitney Avenue in Hamden, and working with local preservation groups and individuals as well as statewide organizations. Preservation Connecticut encourages, advocates, and facilitates historic preservation throughout Connecticut. We hope you'll get to know this organization and check them out online and perhaps consider attending their awards gala. They're available for you online at it's preservationct.org, right?
That's correct.
Very good. Jane Montanaro, their executive director, with us this morning, getting ready to celebrate the 50th anniversary of this organization. And Jane, we're counting on visiting with you and maybe some of your other leaders again, maybe toward the end of the summer to see what kind of events we'll be looking at to cap off this 50-year celebration as it starts to draw to a close. We'll look forward to talking to you again soon. But in the meantime, thanks for your time this morning. Well, I was just reminded by Sarah Bodley, the executive director of Reset, that we had made a commitment last time we talked to them to circle back to talk about an exciting development that's happening at this organization. And we will, along with her colleague, program manager Ndubuisi Okeke from Reset, we will get into that conversation and this exciting news after we give you another piece of exciting news. You've heard them here on For the People before, and this coming week, the Backyard Beekeepers Association is welcoming Dr. Diana Cox Foster, a research leader and entomologist at the USDA ARS Pollinating Insects Research Unit out in Utah. This meeting is in person, and the speaker is going to be joining virtually. So plan to come out for the 7 p.m. event to socialize and chat with other members of the club. The public or anyone with an interest in possibly keeping bees is welcome. Just head to the Norfield Congregational Church in Weston. The event is free, but the group is requesting that you register or learn more about them by visiting backyardbeekeepers.com. All right. Well, from beekeeping to developing a whole new colony of entrepreneurial support, my guests from Reset Social Enterprise Trust, a Hartford-based nonprofit that's dedicated to advancing the social enterprise sector, has just acquired Colab Incorporated, a New Haven-based organization supporting underrepresented entrepreneurs through heart-centered business services. So, guys, welcome to the program. That's certainly a worthy acquisition, and we want to hear all about it. So, Sarah, let's start with you. Beyond the introduction, kind of break it down and frame it for us so we can understand what Reset is going to be now that you're this kind of newly fortified and expanded entity serving Connecticut.
Well, John, I'm in Ndubuisi here. I'm just going to chime in. I think Sarah had her sound cut, and I'll take this on. Really, what Reset has the opportunity to do is be a hub for Connecticut's existing and prospective entrepreneurs. This merger is great news for those folks. Reset and Collab have had a lot of background with each other, and they are really looking forward to what we can do together with the shared ethos, with the shared work and the shared resources. We'll now have the opportunity to build on a long history of effective partnership. And this is something that's been a pretty lengthy and deliberative process. It's been led by the board of both organizations, and we're really excited that this partnership, after really over a year of deliberation and working together, we have the opportunity to come together.
Thank you, Ndubuisi. So Sarah, it kind of in its most simplistic state, aside from all of the combined experience and energy that you're bringing to the entrepreneurial workforce, it's also kind of giving you a second kind of critical base of operation in New Haven, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think both organizations really have a long track record of attracting entrepreneurs from across the state. But it's really also important that we recognize there's a place-based aspect here, especially, you know, we work with a lot of food businesses, retail, makers, you know, artists who really are deeply rooted in their places. So we're excited to kind of bring, you know, both organizations a little bit more firmly across city lines and be showing up in some new ways in New Haven. We still will have our physical, you know, office location up in Hartford, but we've been really lucky to have some amazing partnerships where we're already, you know, excited to be popping up in different events and programming with partners like City Seed and others in the New Haven area. So it's really exciting to be able to kind of begin to put down some, you know, new roots in these both cities, really.
And in fact, prior to the merger, so to speak, or the acquisition of Colab, Reset and Colab existed on parallel paths that occasionally would merge or overlap. You guys had a great collaborative relationship leading up to the acquisition.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Yeah, we've known the co-founders and the last, you know, leadership team at Colab for many years, and really have always been in some form of partnership, you know, thought partnership. I remember meeting up with Caroline and Margaret years ago and, you know, just scheming about how can we do more together to extend the reach of the work that we do. There's a lot of power in you know, the connective tissue in the entrepreneurial space. So this is really just an exciting kind of natural next step into what we were doing organically.
So talk about some of the challenges that you have had, and you know, Colab has also had in terms of reaching and being able to effectively support underrepresented entrepreneurs with this kind of holistic approach that you're bringing to the table as a combined agency now.
Yeah, John, I'll take this one. You know, I would frame the issues on two levels. I think an organization like ours, we have the opportunity to be a go-between entrepreneurs and underrepresented entrepreneurs, as well as the systems that are meant to support them. So on the side of the entrepreneurs, a lot of it is education and awareness. We have to really get out there and make sure that entrepreneurs, folks who are out here either building businesses or interested in entrepreneurship and want to build a business, know that there's support out there for them. A lot of times people aren't keyed into the available opportunities. And so a lot of our outreach and a lot of our work is making sure that people know about the work that we do so that we can properly engage them, because there are just talented people in New Haven, in Hartford, all over the state. And we're out there looking for them so that we can help them along their journey. And on the other side, with different systems, banks, community foundations that are looking to and have an economic incentive for business growth in the state, in Hartford, in New Haven, we want to be able to provide a pipeline of businesses that uplift communities, that employ people locally, that attract talent to the state, to New Haven, to Hartford. And especially with the merger, we have the opportunity to really think about things on a larger scale while also balancing that with the place-based and local pride that's really clear in Hartford, in New Haven, and all over the state.
So Nubisi, take us one more step further, either through a composite of a number of individuals that you've had the pleasure to work with in your tenure, even a specific case study where either you discovered or an individual discovered Reset, and you guys got together, recognized and identified where that entrepreneur was encountering or maybe even self-generating setbacks for themselves, and you were able to provide the necessary support and guidance for them to ultimately become independently successful in their venture?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And I'll actually give you a couple of examples, because we see things along the spectrum. So
first, I'll start off with a program that we have called the Pre-Accelerator that allows folks who are interested in entrepreneurship and don't have an idea, or they're an entrepreneur and they've just gotten started, to just get some basics. We like to think about it as the entryway into our program pipeline for folks to get more support. And there was an entrepreneur who actually was very well educated and very, very well connected, but had just moved to the area and was looking to get connected and was looking to figure out what they could do here in the specifically in the greater New Haven area. And our programming was really able to connect them and tap them into the resources that was available. They went through our pre-accelerator, went through our flagship accelerator, and now they are creating a the company is actually called Mobabby. They are creating actually a smart potty for children who are trying to learn how to potty at an early age. And so that was one example of someone who's well-equipped, someone who is really has all of the tools, but is just new to the area, and they're activated and able to contribute to the community. Another, let's say another example was an entrepreneur who was getting started, but didn't have an idea, didn't really know what was going on for themselves. And at the same time was going through some psychosocial issues at home. And I think that's also a part of the work that we do. We consider our work heart-centered, and especially with the merger that we have now, we have the opportunity to really push this programming out, because entrepreneurship isn't just as simple as showing up to work, balancing the books. Entrepreneurs are people. They're people who have home lives. They're people who have different issues. And our coaching and our specific approach actually allows us to talk about those things, engage them, connect them to different supports so that they can be productive and engaged members of community.
Very good. Sarah, I imagine it can be quite challenging when an individual approaches your organization for assistance and they just know that they or they believe they're going to be most productive and functional and contributing in a situation where they are their own boss, that maybe they have soured to, working for someone else. Is it a really heavy lift to be able to avail these folks of Reset resources to be able to not only get them to identify where their best fit is in the workforce and then to apply the resources to move them off in the right direction and continue supporting them as they go?
It's an interesting thing. I want to uplift what Nubisi said about, being heart-centered. We talk about human-centered, too. And, I mean, people are challenging, right? We all have, strong opinions. We think we know things, and I think I know I can certainly relate to the fact that the more I know, the less I know. And so I think we try to take an approach. First of all, I think we look for folks that have that clarity of purpose, that sort of drive, at least, to really see something through, even if it is just experimental. And, you heard about the groundwork, the pre-accelerator program, where we love that space too, of just figuring out, is there really something to this idea? How can I make sense of it? How do I make it work? But there's also, you have to be willing to fail in entrepreneurship. And so we try to really make what we do a safe space to try and fail and get support and, talk to other people that are going through that same experience so that you have, it's really with so many incubators and accelerator programs, it is kind of that space to fail fast, fail forward. You hear these phrases, but I think there's a lot of truth to that. And so we take a very iterative approach, what's called lean startup methodology, where we really try to help folks kind of through that process and understand like the basic structures and frameworks that they need to succeed and like expand their thinking about what growth can look like and, you know, figure out the best way to test the waters and grow. But there's also a fine line between, you know, you have to also help folks understand, to your point, you know, sometimes it is that story of, I don't want to work for somebody else anymore. And so what does it really mean to be your own boss? What does it mean to be a CEO of a company? What do you want that to look like for yourself? And so I think we really love that process, right, of figuring that out and helping folks kind of investigate and find their own way to the best, you know, version of that for themselves. And whether that looks like a solopreneur who's like a home-based business and that's what they want, that's great. We want to see that through. If they want to be, you know, the next Patagonia, we want to see that through. So it's really a balance of kind of helping them through that process of and really walking alongside them and making sure that they are availed of the resources and the, you know, other experiences of the folks around them. I really want to stress that one thing we do on purpose is most of our programming is in cohorts. And that's really the strength of having a group of people around you that are kind of in that shared experience is super powerful. And we hear that a lot from our businesses, not only the technical stuff from us, but the fact that they're with other people who are also experimenting and growing and learning and, you know, partnering up or doing, you know, getting really creative together on how they pursue that pathway.
Very good. Well, before we talk about the launch event that's coming up on April 3rd and inviting everybody out to be part of it, just spend a couple of minutes, both of you, talking about the process of, identifying this acquisition as a good thing and then making it happen, because that's really a project in and of itself, the mechanics of the acquisition. When did this idea all begin?
Mm-hmm. I'll take this one. The Collab Board approached us about almost a year ago now, really just kind of starting to explore how to maintain Collab's legacy and, you know, a ever-changing world. And so, again, you heard, like, we've been in partnership for many years. So we were excited to kind of entertain the discussion back at that time. We've had lots of like intersections with, you know, people involved in this work. And so it just kind of very naturally began. And we luckily have some very smart people on our board who really helped drive this process forward. We got support from the pro bono partnership. And functionally, you know, the acquisition itself, it made sense, you know, to bring Collab under Recess umbrella. And so we've spent a lot of time just making sure that we understood kind of where's the alignment. It was very important to us to try to make sure that we could bring the team along in this transition. So Indubisi and Cindy Rodriguez are both along with us now, and it's been a really great start to this next phase.
So does much of what Collab is doing and has done up to now going to just, kind of fold as it is into the Reset framework? Or are you considering or tooling some modifications to both make the programming more homogeneous as well as more effective?
So we're really looking forward to deep dive into strategic planning and rebranding. Collab and Reset, they have really great things in their programmatic structure. I know this because it's the work that I've been doing over the past couple of months. And so we're really just looking forward to figuring out together with our partners in our internal team what this new programmatic structure looks like, how it best serves entrepreneurs in New Haven, in Hartford, and around the state. And so really, John, that's something that we're still figuring out together, and we're actually excited about that process.
Well, let's bring you a whole new world of support in terms of driving people to join you folks on April 3rd. Give us the 2-minute spiel on this upcoming event and who you particularly would hope to see there.
Absolutely. Yeah, so we're really excited. This will be our official celebratory launch event, April 3rd. We are psyched to be actually hosted at another amazing partner here in New Haven. City Seed is going to be our host for the evening in their awesome new building. So we'll be out there the evening of the 3rd, I believe, from 5:30 to 7:30-ish. And I would say we really absolutely want our entrepreneurs to be able to come out and celebrate with us. The more the merrier. Certainly all of our various alumni are on the list, and they'll be getting the direct invite. But I would say for any entrepreneur who's kind of seeking community and seeking to learn more about what we're up to together, we would love to see you there. And then, of course, our partners are many. You know, there's so many folks doing really important work here throughout the ecosystem. We've got government partners, other entrepreneur support orgs who we certainly hope will also want to join us and come out and connect. And as we go into the next few months, this is kind of like our first point where we can gather in community and really start to share a little bit and also invite, participation. We really want to make sure we're, as you heard, and NWC said it, like just the more we can work together to make sure we're putting out the next, iteration of our programs. It's really going to be for you, for our community, particularly of newer entrepreneurs. So please, come out and join us and help us hear from you. We want to know what you're up to so that we can walk with you.
Well, we can't wait to hear more and help you promote this new expanded and growing statewide effort. Sarah Baldley is executive director for Reset, and Ndubi Okeke is a program manager. Their goal at Reset is to meet entrepreneurs wherever they are in their trajectory and help them take their businesses to the next level. You can visit Reset, where great companies grow, by going to resetco.org. We want to thank you guys for being part of the program this morning. Best of luck. Maybe we'll try to get down there and see you at the opening event in early April. And in the meantime, we will make plans to talk with you again once things get moving in the newly expanded organization. Thanks so much for your time. Well, as you heard, the Chi Sigma chapter of Sigma Gamma Rho sorority is preparing for their annual youth symposium coming up on March 8th. And we want to get the word out to anyone out there who knows a young person between the ages of 8 and 18 who might benefit from this activity. And we're going to hear all about it from sorority members Tanya Hennigan, who's head of the Youth Symposium Committee, and Tanisha Sanchez, who's Chapter Basilius, Chapter President of the Sigma Gamma Rho sorority. We will get into that conversation, but we want to talk about also an opportunity for young people to join the next generation of journalists here in the United States. The New England High School Journalism Collaborative is helping train the next generation of journalists at an all-expense-paid summer workshop for students June 21st through 28th. These students are going to work out of a newsroom at Simmons University in Boston and learn to report, write, edit for a newspaper and produce multimedia projects for the web. They're going to be assigned stories, they're going to do interviews, and they're going to be exposed to working on a deadline to create their own newspaper. The program is intended for students who are from traditionally underserved populations, and some preference is going to be given to current high school juniors and seniors. The deadline to apply is Friday, April 4th, so head for the New England High School Journalism Collaborative website and hit the tab for summer workshop. You can get that website at nehsjc.org. All right. And now from journalism training to youth leadership development with our guests, Tanya and Tonisha from Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority. Guys, thanks for being on the program and for taking the lead in developing and continuing and sustaining this youth symposium. Tonisha, as the chapter president, please give us a little bit of background on the organization you're representing.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having us on. We really do appreciate this opportunity to share. So yes, I am Tanisha Sanchez, and I am the current president of the Iota Chi Sigma chapter of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority, Incorporated. For those people, we just want to give a little bit of background. So Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority, Incorporated, we were founded November 12th, 1922, at Butler University in Indianapolis, Indiana. Since the inception of our organization, we have built and sustained a respected relationship for leading positive change with uplifting our community, making sure that we do sisterhood leadership and service. We have more than 100,000 members with more than 500 chapters in the United States, Bahamas, Bermuda, Canada, Ghana, Germany, Japan, South Korea, U.S. Virgin Islands, and even in the UAE. We also have affiliate programs with our Rower Club for teenage girls and our Philo affiliates for young women who are friends of the sorority who may not have a collegiate degree. Our commitment to service is expressed in our slogan, Greater Service, Greater Progress. And we do have a proud history of providing positive, proactive community outreach nationally as well as internationally. We like to partner and do sponsorships that promote greater good in education, service, as well as leadership development. And then, you know, just talking about the leadership annual youth symposium, we'll be talking about that a little bit later.
So Tanya, I'm wondering if you're part of a Sigma Gamma Rho legacy or if you're first generation to the sorority.
So I am first generation and proud to be.
And what made you decide to pledge and be part of this group specifically?
Absolutely. So Basilisk did share with you that there were other programs that include the Rowers, which are a younger group. And I was actually introduced through my daughter, who was a participant of the Rowers group. Within our chapter of Iota Chi Sigma for the sorority. And because of what I saw in terms of what they had to offer, the sisterhood, the community service, amongst other things, that's what actually drew me into the sorority.
How about for you, Tanisha?
So for me as well, I went to college, you know, not knowing a lot about sororities and fraternities. I am proud to say I also am first generation, and I just, the values that align with me, with Sigma Gamma Rho, so all of our national programs that we do, the fact that, you know, we were founded by educators. We have a swimming program, Swim 1922, which is really big for me because a lot of people in our community do not know how to swim, so yes, that's something that was very important to me. And as well, you know, we do Operation Big Book Bag, which is for schools and supplies. We also have women's wellness. So all those aligned with my own values. So it was a perfect fit for me.
Oh, that's wonderful. Tonisha, had you been part of the youth symposium in prior years?
As far as prior to becoming in the sorority, no.
No, prior to this youth symposium has been every year. Were you also working on it last year or the year before?
Oh, absolutely. So prior to me becoming the president of the organization, I was the rower coordinator, which is for the young ladies. So that was something that we made sure that our young ladies participated. They did the introduction. They did the program. So making sure that all of our young ladies were part of this program. So, yes, I've loved to participate in it because, again, I do like to kind of guide and lead the young people and to give them, you know, some leadership opportunities and give them more activities.
Right. Tanya, how about you? As head of the Youth Symposium Committee this year, did you bring prior experience working on previous events?
Absolutely. So I have always worked on STEM events with the youth And that was part of my draw to Sigma Gamma Rho Incorporated, was the fact that they did have the Youth Symposium and that they promoted this every year. It is a global initiative for our chapter, mm-hmm. as well as our sorority. It is something that happens across all of our chapters. Mm-hmm. It's the second Saturday of every March. And so there are other chapters, in addition to ours, that do put on the annual Youth Symposium. And so I'm really excited to really share more about what we do and what we're going to do within the Youth Symposium.
Great. Well, lay it out for us, Tanya. What are people to expect if they attend? The 8 to 18 is a pretty broad range of influential young people. Tell us a little bit about how this is all going to roll out.
Absolutely. So in the past, we've done symposiums that focused on various issues of topics for the youth. We focused on mental health. We focused on financial fitness. We have focused on social awareness. And this year, we're focused on AI. And, you know, there's a lot going on in the world of AI, a lot that young people are and are not aware of. And so the focus of this year will be to really share with them a little bit more about what it means, how it can be applicable to school, how not to use it, how to use it, and also in a broader perspective, how AI can be used in terms of, you know, when they're thinking about career paths. You know, that is going to be an area that's going to be very big as youth traverse into higher education. Again, our focus is on, we have had many other youth symposiums where we partnered with our local elementary, junior, and high schools because of the age group. This year, we will be hosted by King Robinson Magnet School on March 8th from 10 to 2 as a part of our Iota Chi Sigma chapter. Some of our other sister chapters, as I shared with you, this is a global initiative across our entire sorority. So some of our other sister chapters in Connecticut will also be hosting a youth symposium. So for those who cannot make ours in the New Haven area, please consider going to our Theta Alpha Sigma chapter in Hartford. They're also doing their event on March 8th. From 12 to 3 p.m., the South End Boys and Girls Club in Hartford, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. Our other sister chapter, which is in Waterbury, Lambda Zeta Sigma, will be hosting theirs on March 15th from 10 to 2 p.m. at the Waterbury Boys and Girls Club. So we really look forward to engaging our youth, whether they come to our event in New Haven or Hartford or Waterbury. We just want to make sure that our youth is aware that we are here and that this is being put on. If they have any questions, just feel free to reach out. We are opening, making sure that our registration is open and ready. We do want to make sure that you register as soon as possible because this is a big event. And there has been a number of interests, so we just want to encourage quick registration as well.
Yeah, and we'll get to that registration information in a couple of minutes before we wrap up. But I guess thanks to the juxtaposition of scheduling and the fact that Waterbury, in my hometown's event, is happening a week later, that young people who really get jazzed either up in Hartford or with you guys on March 8th might want to just double dip, huh?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
The more the merrier.
Great. Yeah. Well, briefly, before we give folks the contact and registration information, what are a couple of the other specific things that you're planning for your event in Greater New Haven that young people can look forward to? Tanisha, what do you think is the ideal outcome for a young person who's considering coming?
Oh, I think that the ideal outcome is they just get a lot of information. So as Asura Hennigan has just stated, we're going to be doing a lot on AI. We like to do workshops. We like to show them how technology is not bad. I know that, you know, the youth usually are more comfortable with the technology, so they're able to use it, but we can show them how to use it, you know, in schooling and looking for careers and looking for, you know, searching for schools that they want to go to, et cetera. And also just giving more more notoriety to the sorority as a whole, how, you know, our programs and what we do. So just educating them on what we do and letting them know that we are there for all types of concerns that, you know, negatively impact our youth. So we're there to talk about and help them with, you know, self-esteem issues, human trafficking, teen pregnancy. All of those things are incorporated. Even though we have a theme, we talk about all those things and how we can, you know, help people and how we are there to support and make sure that they're there for the community. Like the program benefits, they're going to get, you know, improved educational outcomes, improved behavioral outcomes. And then it's just a highly anticipated event that is supported by local communities. So that's our goal, is just to be relevant in the lives of our youth.
All right. Well, let's close it out by telling people how to get registered. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. And so if you're interested in registering for our youth symposium on March 8th from 10 to 2 p.m. There's a number of ways you can contact us through our Instagram page at @iotachi_sigma, or you can go to our website at sgrowhaven.com, or you can reach us on Facebook at Iota Chi Sigma Chapter.
Very good. Tanya Hennington is head of the Youth Symposium Committee for the Chi Sigma Chapter of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated, and Tanisha Sanchez is the chapter president. We want to thank them both this morning and hope folks will get involved and come out to the annual Youth Symposium they are hosting on March 8th, or through their sister sorority up in Hartford on March 8th, or their sister sorority in Waterbury on March 15th. Thank you guys, and best of luck with the event. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA for our program that's relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program can be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station websites. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs John Vocat. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime. Just find it under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10-1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.